Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting experts and innovators about the most interesting things. I'm joined today by Caroline Geigerich, who has been responsible for driving digital transformation and consumer engagement across a number of very well-known brands. Welcome, Caroline.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. I'd love to jump right in and find out more about your backstory and how you've arrived at this point in your career.
Now I am VP of Innovation at Warner Music Group, but the how it all started part is actually kind of interesting. If I go way back in the way back machine, I had just gotten a letter from Brown University. I was eagerly ripping it open with my single mom in the kitchen, like waiting for like the words, "We're sorry, but you're not accepted," you know. But instead, it said, "Oh my God, you are accepted." And I was so excited. Awesome. But at the same time, the next moment right after the moment of being like, "Oh, I got in," you know, was the moment where I was like, "Wait a second, that seems really expensive." What?
Yep.
My mom was a single mom at the time. She was actually in college when I was in high school. So we were kind of like roommates, if you will. And she would go up to college, which at the time she was getting her master's in social work. So she was going to Boston from Rhode Island. And I wasn't actually making a salary yet, if you will. And so I was thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to pay for this? And so that started my era of like pivoting and resilience, which was to just basically call up all of my possible family members and like make the pitch why I need to go to this school because it would change my life forever, which by the way, it did. But I wasn't about to say no, and I was going to make it happen. So what that led to is, like I said, if Taylor Swift has her Eras Tour, my Eras Tour is about pivoting and resilience. And I'm taking that into my career in this idea of innovation. And what does innovation mean? It's really about looking for first-to-market opportunities in emerging technology on the marketing side or on the product side. So my Eras Tour began really when I went to HBO. And I spent a lot of time before music and television. But at HBO, my very first moment of like digging in and trying to solve problems in a new way was we started looking at HBO boxing. At the time, there was this show called Fight Science, which would show you all the science behind the fight.
And to me, I remember that. My brother was quite addicted to that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, your brother was interested in a show we took a hard look at because for HBO boxing at the time, the only analytics was a guy on the side of the ring counting punches and blocks. That was it. And so we concepted ways in which we could come up with more visualizations. One was called punch zone. We divided the head and the body into three zones per, and we would show you on screen where the boxer was landing all of the punches. Because unbeknownst to most people, it's not just guys like wildly throwing punches at each other and that's it. There's actually a whole method. There's a whole strategy. They're actually thinking of where's the weak spot. You know, where can I throw them off? I knew none of this, by the way, because I knew hardly nothing about boxing coming in. The other thing we did was we created something called punch force, where we put an accelerometer into the boxing glove so you could test the force and speed of a punch. So now it's not just guy hitting other guy in the face, but like now his punch is going 50 miles per hour. And you're like, whoa, that's hard. So that was sort of the first. And when you think about the ultimate impact, one, okay, that sounds cool. But what does it really do for the business? It's about retaining subscribers for HBO, which at the time was sitting at probably $3 billion of annual revenue. So creating more stickiness for their subscribers was big business. Because sometimes people think about innovation as a bubble, like just a cool thing, nice to have. I'm like, no, no. This is about your business and pivoting before the business leaves you behind. And so cutting back up, I know this is a long story, but you asked.
Oh, it's a great story, though. I'm loving it.
So cutting to now, what I do now is I look for those same first-to-market opportunities for artists in the emerging tech space. It was Web3 when I first started, quickly pivoted when the market pivoted. Now we're in the era of AI, but there's also gaming. There's also metaverse. There's many opportunities in the emerging tech space for artists, either to deepen their engagement with their fans, to increase their existing revenue streams, or optimally to create a whole new revenue stream.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, that's like a whole, yeah, like sustainability. It's all of the important things that people kind of forget when, especially now when there's sort of like times of chaos. to put it mildly, that's a really cool way to look at it, that idea of sort of pivoting and resilience. Love that. So what is keeping you busy right now?
AI is definitely keeping everyone busy, not just me, because the pace at which it's expanding and taking on new capabilities is exponential. And just if you look at marketing generally, just zooming out AI aside, everything in marketing is exponentially growing and shifting in exponential ways. So keeping a handle on it. So many times people say, well, how do you wrap your arms around this? I'm like, barely, and not even well every single day. You know, I do my best, but I am one human. I'm not a robot, and I'm definitely not AI. So my capability of digestion is limited to one human being, and I do my very best to try to stay on top of every single trend I can every day. But it's hard. But AI, I think, is the most transformative one. And I think because I'm in music, I think this particular period is an interesting one in the sense that music may not have reacted well, and that's putting it nicely, to technological changes in the past. But because of that mistake, you see, I'm really interested in people that learn from things that they didn't do well, because it's impossible not to make a mistake. But if you continue making the mistake, that's the thing you really got to look at. And it seems to me that the music industry as a whole recognized that some mistakes were made in the past. And because of that, in this AI moment, while it is scary to some degree, especially when you're talking about artist IP, it's really exciting in a whole bunch of other ways. And so instead of ignoring it or trying to, like, you know, legally submit it into submission, they're really trying to embrace it and figure out the ways that it does work, both for the artists and the business. And I think that's really groundbreaking. I also think gaming is a force. It has been a force. I've worked in gaming to some degree since 2005, so it's not like it's a new concept. But I think what is shifting now is looking at gaming not just as top of the funnel awareness from a marketing perspective or for getting awareness of an artist out there, but also bottom of the funnel revenue generation. And that could be from actual counting of streams, which artists everywhere care about. It could be from virtual merchandise that's sold in a game, but it could be also now physical merchandise, which either is artist merch, physical audio. There's a lot of things that games are now shifting into. They're clearly social spaces and not just gameplay. So, like, that proliferation is turning gaming generally into a much more enticing space for the music industry. And then the last one that I'm super excited about, because I spent like a hot minute in beauty working for Smashbox Cosmetics. And if you know anything about beauty, it runs like America runs on Duncan, but beauty runs on loyalty. And so when I first got to Warner 2 years ago, what was interesting to me was that artists in the Elvis era had fan clubs. They literally used to mail his fans like an announcement of where he would be, and like the fans found out about it in the mail. How cute. But then Artists Everywhere went to social media because it was one-to-many approach. And they really like just put in a megaphone. They had the ability to just market themselves to so many more people. Of course they did. But then with Web3, while it was convoluted and lots of things were going wrong, one thing that was going right amidst all the noise was that it was really about re-engaging with consumers or fans. It was like, how do we have a relationship with these people in which we can reward them for doing the things we want them to do? And so I see this coming back. And instead of Web3, it's now replaced with this conversation about first-party data. Like, how can we get first-party data about our fans? And if you think about your favorite band in your head, and probably all of the time you spent going to their shows or listening to their music or buying their stuff, if you think about, you wouldn't be just like one fan now. You would be like one of their, you know, small cohorts of super fans that would be rewarded and showcased as such. What a different relationship you would then have. You'd still love the artist in either case. But in case number two, you would feel like personally more appreciated, which probably would make you go even more of the distance with that artist.
Yeah. You have a more of a personal relationship or that you can hold on to. My favorite artist is Billie Eilish. It would be very interesting to see him now again.
even though that's a universal artist, she's a wonderful artist. No, she's epic.
Yeah. It just speaks to state of mind, I think.
She's epic, and whenever I think of that song from the Barbie movie, I cry continuously.
I know. But also what great like sort of brand synergy there, to use the very overused word. That entire movie was just
true.
Yeah.
And the way that she shifted her voice the way she wanted to during that song, I mean, what an artist.
Yeah.
What an artist.
So fantastic. Awesome. What are you excited about right now in the innovation space?
I mean, I talked about a lot of it just then with the AI and gaming. But one other thing I'm super excited about these days is NFC, which is near field communication. I'm literally sitting at my desk surrounded by NFC chips, no lie.
I'm with you. I have one at my door when people come in for the Wi-Fi.
Okay, I love that. I love that. I love it because of its ability to take physical objects and give them a digital manifestation, a digital experience. And whereas artists are concerned, there is so much you can do with that. We tested it on a piece of merch for Nessa Barrett, and we gave the fans that bought that merch, there was obviously a chip in the shirt, that gave you bonus exclusive content for buying the shirt. It was like, her behind the scenes on tour, a day in the life you go mini golfing with her, a day with her on a shoot. Like, you really feel like you're in the artist's life in a personal way. And only the 500 people that had that shirt had that experience. So like, it's leaning in on what I'm saying earlier. Like, how do we give the people that show up and they show out and they like buy the merch, the special stuff, you know? It also gives us a portal to first-party data because people that log into the experience provide their email to keep going through. Now, whether or not we are allowed to use that for marketing, that's a whole marketing opt-in story. But still, having this connection and starting to build those experiences is really interesting. That's merch. Music for me is the holy grail because I have behind me on a bookcase somewhere like a whole collection of vinyl, and I can imagine how cool this would be. Like, say, you know, on a piece of David Bowie vinyl, you had all of the videos from the vinyl, like him talking about the photo shoot. Just imagine all the stuff. The Barbie vinyl. I literally had this conversation because Atlantic Records actually put that album together. I was like, what if the album, right, has all the songs? Then it has all the artists talking about why Barbie was important to them growing up, what the movie meant to them. I'm just like, your brain could explode in all the possibilities.
That's so cool. I dig it. It's so amazing to just get that little bit more with something you're already purchasing, something you're already engaging with. And then you get that little bit more that just solidifies that loyalty, adds to that experience. That's fantastic. Really sort of shows how we are shifting into that experience economy more and more. With sort of every year, it just becomes deeper and deeper. Do you think there are new opportunities emerging or challenges that will be important in the next few years?
I mean, there's challenges every day from all sides. In music specifically or marketing as a whole? Which one are you thinking?
Oh, I mean, I think music would probably be interesting to delve into.
Music over time, I mean, so for music as a whole, I think what's going to be more difficult over time is breaking artists. Because even in the advent of AI, there are benefits, but there are risks. So take the space of AI-generated music. That's going to, just like it's doing in the self-publishing space, it's going to proliferate a lot into these platforms that they're going to have to filter or deal with or somehow, you know, dim down, because it's long tail. And some will be quality. Some will be, oh, this is revelatory. But a lot of it will be junk. And so when there's a proliferation on the system, but there's great talent still trying to be heard, it makes everything more difficult. Like I spent an evening with a friend of mine who is an artist, a fantastic artist. And she was talking to me about all of her challenges. And the fact that she is expected not just to be an artist, but to be like a world-class marketer, social media, content extraordinaire, creator, PR person. I'm like, this is, now I'm talking about like when you're coming up, you're an artist that's trying to make it through the system. You're not the Cardi B's of the world who have like their teams of suite of people on it. But if you're an emerging artist coming out and like, I'm a marketer and I'm dealing with how crazy this universe is. You're a musician, like you've got a whole nother craft, but also you have to be a world-class marketer and all the things. That just seems truly overwhelming. And so for the rest of us in the space that represent some of these large music companies like the Sony, the Universal, the Warner Music, it's really a responsibility for all of us to try and assist that craziness of the space. And help artists navigate through the truly chaos of breaking their careers. You know, like to some people, it's business. But as someone who has been a writer for many years, which has nothing to do with music, I find this very personal because I know what it's like to have your craft and feel so passionate about it. Now, I'm not a musician, but I do feel that empathy for what it must be like just trying to get your voice heard in a very crowded room.
What are some important customer trends that you're seeing or things that your colleagues are excited about?
So this is something I'm really interested in these days. I think it's, can I say I'm a woman of a certain era? So like this is why this trend really interests me, but I'm really into the whole nostalgia that people are showing.
Peak millennial.
Things like, oh, I love it. I'm like, I love it. I love that people are like showing up for nostalgia tours. I love that like vinyl has a moment. I love that people are collecting tapes. Like, I'm really into it. But then there's a high technology side that I find really interesting. ABBA. You know, they recreated ABBA in their younger selves, nostalgia, with their younger voices, nostalgia. Yesterday, I was talking about, like, for me, the recreation, and I wasn't alive technically when they were, like, having their early 1970s, like, concerts, but it's Led Zeppelin. If I could see Led Zeppelin, like, in their prime, like, in one of those, like, smoky clubs with, like, sweat flying around, I would lose my mind. I would, because there's no way for me to do that. You know, there's no, I'm nostalgic about it. It's not even my era, but it's like something that I would die to see. You know, it's like seeing Elvis come back on America's Got Talent. You're like, what? the first time we saw Tupac as a hologram, I mean, probably mixed feels, but also like, the time I saw Biggie as a hologram, like these things are like, they literally light up the wow. And that's going to keep proliferating. I was on a panel this week with more television folks talking about like digital twins, but SAG calls them replicas. And that's okay. We have a moment where people are imitating Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, et cetera, et cetera. Bad. We don't like this because that's stealing somebody's like unique IP, their own IP, their voice and their likeness. But there is a way for celebrity talent of all kinds, actors, musicians, to take control of that. It's by literally taking control and creating their own. For example, FKA Twigs created her own digital twin to do her PR. So remember earlier when I talked about, man, musicians have to do so much and be like, wear so many hats and like, how do they do it all? She's like, you know what? I don't want to do PR. I want to do my music. I want to spend my time doing my music. So we'll let the twin do everything else. And I'm like, genius.
That's one way.
So I think we're going to see many manifestations of this, be it bringing some folks back who we haven't seen in sort of an epic show, to just seeing artists play with how they use their time with some of these new digital enhancements, from like AI to 360 capture to all of these things.
That'd be so cool. I'm thinking about it now. And what a good idea to sort of outsource your own self. You know?
I know. I would do it now if it wasn't so expensive.
If I could figure it out. If I could afford it and figure it out, I would definitely be right on it.
You could find a company to do it for you, but it is actually quite expensive.
Yeah, not there yet. Awesome. So moving on to a little bit of you as a leader, how would you want people to describe you and how you make change happen on your best day?
I think the two words that I would want someone to use with me are curiosity and optimism. Curiosity is a requirement of this job, because if you don't have it, you can't dig deep enough to figure out all the ways to make something happen and why it matters. Optimism, because I told a room of creatives once that the number one thing you're going to have to get good at, it goes back to that resilience I talked about, is people saying no to your most epic of ideas, the ones that you're like 100,000% a winner. Someone will say no to that. And if you can't just like let that fall off you and move on, it's going to be a difficult road. That's the two things. I would say as a leader, and I just spoke about this yesterday, is this idea of creating psychological safety on teams.
Love that.
I think it's really important. Some leaders are thinking only about all the decisiveness they need to act with. And that's true. You need to be decisive as a leader, because otherwise you're stuck and you don't move. But what I think is really key is having the ability to allow people to speak their mind, even if it's disagreeing with your point of view. Because challenging and critical thinking, I think, are on the decline. And for a host of reasons, and not just, you know, managers who don't lean into psychological safety. But there, I think that critical thinking is under attack from all sides. And so really leaning in and say, please critique me. How are we feeling about this? Does this make sense? Or is there any opposing view? If only to say, oh, that's interesting. How can we solve for that? Versus, let's shut it all down right now. You know, there's two ways you go about that. And so I work really hard on trying to figure out spaces where that's okay and encouraged. And also encouraging different personality types. You can tell I happen to be more extroverted, but also encouraging people who may not like to speak in spaces or aren't the loudest person in the room to have another moment where they might be able to share what they're thinking. Makes me think of someone specifically on my team when I was at Showtime. She's the quietest person. She would never say anything in meetings. She was the smartest person on the team. And so I would always like walk just with her out of the meeting, just she and I. I'm like, what do you think? She'd be like, well, I don't like it, and here's why. I went, okay, how would you fix it? And then she'd tell me something else, and I'd be like, okay, that's great. Thank you so much. Because I knew she would never talk in there.
I love that as a strategy. So, yeah, I mean, take the ego out of it and just be open to everyone in the room. I think we spend so much time talking about diversifying the room, and we forget that once the room is diverse, it's that everyone should also be able to be heard.
Yes. 3,000% what you just said. It's not just like putting players in the game. If they don't get to play, yeah, what's the point of having them on the field?
Do you have a process that you go through, a methodology or a framework that you use or recommend?
I have a lot of different frameworks that I use at different times, but I'll tell you a few I really like. One is the jobs to be done framework. And the jobs to be done framework breaks consumer needs down into three levels: the functional need, the emotional need, and the social need. So if this was a Nike pair of shoes, the functional need would be it covers your foot and, you know, keeps your foot from harm. The social need would be like, oh my God, look at my Air Force Ones. How cool am I? Don't you think I'm cool, Fuzzlin? And then the emotional need would be perhaps this idea of like, they really lean into the idea of being a hero, whatever hero means to you. Like, be the hero of your own story. It always reminds me of that kid that was sort of like puttering down the street. He's like shuffling, you know, he's going really slow. But that is his superhero moment. Just the fact that he was out just shuffling down the street in his pair of Nikes. So I think about that a lot. And the reason I think about that a lot is, do I want to do this thing because it really solves some sort of need that someone has? Or is this literally solving a need that no one has? Because if it's solving a need that no one has, it is built to fail.
So many products coming out that just are not there to do anything.
Yes. You're like, wait, who needs it?
Who is this for?
Yes. Which is also going back to the critical thinking. If you see something and your gut is like, do people... Which actually happens to me all the time, because I run in a lot of emerging tech circles. So there is a tendency for anything new to be like, we all need to align around this thing. And I can tell you the number one product that was coming out that I was a pretty critical voice was the Apple Vision Pro. Not a fan. I was not a fan of what it looked like. I am a fan of its functionality. But I also think, like, at the end of the day, we are egotistical creatures. And the fact that it was quickly made into a meme of, like, how silly does this look, was the exact reason I'm like, it doesn't even feel Apple to me. Because, like, Apple is sex appeal, you know? So, like, I'm critical about things because I think we should always be thinking about both sides. But then someone could come and be like, it's Apple. They're going to crush you with their product making skills. And there we have a conversation. So that's one. Two, I really like this performance and productivity sprint I just did. And it was led by a neuroscientist and a data researcher. And it was really talking about how we optimize our day. Not put more stuff in the day, but like optimize the time that we have. And I know this isn't about like how to do my work, but it is because there's so much stuff flying at all of our faces every day, right? Like you get to the end of the day and you feel like, did I just answer emails today? That cannot stand, because if that's how I am feeling, that means that I'm not affecting real lasting change. And so this course is about like identifying focus sprints in your day, literally an hour where you do nothing but this task, whatever the task is that you've assigned, and how to designate your tasks, either what they call MITs or LITs. MITs are most important tasks, and LITs are less important tasks. And of course, you will realize right away that most of the things you spend most of your day doing are the LITs. You spend all your day. And so just even scoping that all out, like you're creating a project plan for your everyday, has been so intensely helpful. And I'll give you the one thing that has like changed my life. And it's so simple and dumb that like saying it here, people would be like, well, duh. But like these guys, my noise canceling headphones, I didn't use them in a sense of like, I'm going to put these on for my focus sprint and I'm not going to pay attention to anything, especially when I'm at home. It seems ridiculous because like there's less distractions. But what I realized is the human brain is very motivated to try to identify either visual cues or audio cues and constantly focusing on it, even in a small way. And so the minute I put those things on for my little 60-minute sprints, the amount that it literally felt like my brain was on fire.
I'm going to try that.
So that's my note.
I'm definitely going to try that one. Tons. Because I always forget to put the noise canceling on. I sort of just like, oh.
Same. But now I do it like it's a method, you know? I'm like, oh, noise canceling headphones on.
And you'll be surprised at the weird things that do disturb you even when you're at home.
Oh, yeah. Well, and especially if you have kids, if you have a dog. I mean, I don't have kids, but I have a dog who literally whimpers all the time. In fact, for this podcast, I had to put her in another room.
I have a very needy cat who I think is asleep, and that's why she's quiet. So
you get it.
Awesome. What advice would you give your younger self?
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Good one.
Don't be so hard on yourself. Like, and I'm still trying to give it to my older self at this moment.
When you look at the industries that you work in and that you have worked in and where they sit in the wider world, where do you see the opportunities to really reinvent the way things are done within those industries, besides all of the amazing stuff you've spoken about?
The thing that I think AI is actually optimized for isn't for all the cool Gen AI, like visual generation, voice clone. This is all cool and can be very meaningful. Like, just as an example, Randy Travis lost his voice in a stroke. And they used a voice clone to give him his voice back to do a new album. And that's so meaningful, right? Like, that's so lovely. You use voice clones to do translations. This is all cool. And frankly, the translation bit should lead to a fair bit of revenue expansion as well. But where I really isolate the opportunities is all the stuff that can be mechanized in-house. That is explosive. It's explosive. Like, even things like, okay, for example, you can use AI to basically go through any document that you want and identify all the red flags or things that you should really think about, risk assessment, really just like zeroing in. Or you could even ask for it to assess it based on if it was a CMO. Or the reason I think that's revelatory is most of our C-suiters in America don't have a lot of time. And I know that because in my last job, I was a consultant for many of them, and none of them have any time. And so they have these huge teams that they can't possibly have 30 minutes with everyone every day. But of course, wouldn't it be great if you could get a CMO's time every single day on your work products? Well, now we could. Now, I know there's a lot of legal red tape around what I'm saying. Frankly, I've had all those conversations with lawyers. It'll get worked out. But what I'm saying is, like, our ability to automate processes. AI has been around for a long time. But it seems like when OpenAI came to town and, like, reinvented the Gen AI wheel, everybody woke up like, whoa. And so I think a lot about how a music business that may not even be well optimized to take advantage of the long tail of their artists, because literally people only have so many hours in a day. Well, okay, but think about all the opportunities that are still there for the business, there for the artist that aren't being optimized because we literally only have so many people. Right? Like, so if we could start to do a lot of that stuff that doesn't even happen right now, I'm not talking about replacing people. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all the stuff that's like a glaring red. Like, if there was a red sign behind me that said opportunity, I'm talking about that stuff. If AI, and it can come in and really start to optimize those advantages, it's not just like cool and nice to have. That's like a huge revenue generator. That's the stuff that I'm really excited about, not just for music, but literally all businesses everywhere.
Yeah, take a lot of the sort of mundane, not even the mundane, but the sort of things that people do without thinking, and somehow translate that into being able to assist the entire team. Be very interesting to see.
For sure, like even this isn't AI, but one thing that really changed my platform, my life. Some people use Superhuman. That is AI. Calendly changed my life, and it's because I don't have to email people 3,000 times. What time do you want? Here, book some time. And like that simple act and how much time I then get back in my day or my week is explosive. So start to add more and more things like that, more and more things, Superhuman, all these other platforms. Like you're going to start. It's been happening for years. We just didn't identify what it was. But now more and more and more of our day will be for the things we're truly optimized for, not the stuff we hate, like doing expenses or all the other stuff we hate.
Answering endless emails. Fantastic. Now, this is my favorite part of the podcast. It's the sort of our quick fire questions. And the first one is, could your friends explain what you do?
Yes. So they would say something like, she does super nerd innovation shit for music companies. outside of that, that would be it.
What would you want them to say?
That's actually fine. And I frankly,
fair enough.
I would tell you a really interesting exercise that I just went through is to ask my friends what 10 words they would use to describe me. You can ask your professional contacts and you can ask your friends and see what comes back. It's fascinating.
I'm going to try that. I'm going to ask. A little bit scared of the responses, though.
Don't be. They're going to be great. And you'll be like, oh.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. But also, like, if there's something in there that, just to your point, I would rather have them say this about me. Well, then think about, why don't they say this about me? Is there something I could lean into more so that they do think of that thing?
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Make every moment count. truly. I mean, in 2016, I had a tumor on my adrenal gland that was taken out, but it really messed with all sorts of things in my life. And like, that really is like that one piece of advice. I don't know if you've seen the movie Inside Out 2, but
not yet. It's on my list.
You got to. They have a character that she has a new emotion when she hits adolescence, and it's anxiety. And anxiety really like steals her joy. And the reason why I think so many adults went to see that movie is because we all identify with anxiety stealing our joy. And we all try to dim it down the best we can, but we all struggle with it. And so make every moment count sounds so simple, but it's actually really hard to achieve.
What could you not live without?
Love. Again, it sounds sweet and corny, but like, I don't think it is. And I also think in thinking about the loneliness epidemic that is basically ravaging the globe, I think if people stopped thinking of it as it's just like a soft cute, but like more as like, we need these things. We need community. We literally need it. We are human beings. We feed off the support of everyone else. You know that saying, it takes a village?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. It does. And we've lost the village. We've lost the village somewhere. And we need to find it.
We've lost like the importance of the village. Like we don't think we need it. Well, I think I need it. I know I need it.
100% agree. I think I don't think I could. Yeah, I couldn't go through the day without sort of, you know, checking in on my friends or even my family. I think, you know, mother calls me way too much, but it would be very strange if she didn't.
Exactly. These are the things that are really important. Like my grandfather used to say, because he always thought I worked too hard. He would say in a southern drawl, he'd be like, Caroline, nobody's going to put your profession on your gravestone.
And then our final question, my favorite one, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I went with 8 out of 10 on this one. 8 out of 10, because I've seen some truly weird people in the 9 and 10 range that even I am like, wow, I probably want to be friends with them, but I realize that I can't achieve their epicness.
Yeah.
And I do think weird is epic. Like, the more weird it is, the more interested I am. Truly.
We're looking for that uniqueness and that sort of thing that piques our interest.
Exactly.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.